Welcome to Books on Monday, a podcast from Portico at portifex.com.
It happened so long ago that I don't remember when it was that I learned that we call conjoined newborns Siamese twins because of Chang and Eng Bunker. The Thai brothers, born on the banks of the Mekong River in 1811, were joined at the sternum by a flesh-covered strip of cartilage. Modern surgery, we are assured, would be able to separate them easily, but this was beyond the medicine of their own day, even in the Western capitals that they toured as basically acrobatic freaks, working for P.T. Barnum and others, and toward the end for themselves. The curious part of the story is that the twins wound up not only settling, but marrying in the Piedmont of North Carolina, where their traces, and for all I know their descendants, remain to this day. They took their name, in the spirit of their adopted patriotism, from the Revolutionary skirmish. Perhaps it was my youth, but I was put off by the marrying part. Having sex with your wife while unable to extricate yourself from contact with your brother was far too painful a prospect for me to contemplate with any interest. I closed the book on Chang and Eng. So, when Darren Strauss's novel, Chang and Eng, came out a few years ago, I gave it a subject matter pass. I have always had a high resistance to fiction that is rooted in improbable predicaments, because what I love about fiction is the likelihood that I might take the place of this or that character, or that this or that character might slip into my own life. In short, I treasure the fundamental ordinariness of fiction. I did not think that the story of Siamese twins, 1811, 1874, who migrated to North Carolina, why the South, and married sisters there, could possibly be ordinary. But when the novel found its own way into my library, I discovered that Mr. Strauss had hit on a way to make it so. There can be no such thing as a novel about a freak, except perhaps in the marches of science fiction that stretch between the world we know and the imaginary worlds that some people find more satisfactory. Because the whole point of fiction is an ongoing demonstration that no human being is a freak. Mr. Strauss, who advises us that the story as he tells it is both true and not, his imaginations having picked up where the record left off, appears to have decided that the best way to engage the humanity of these men from around the world would be to allow one of them, the more literate as it happened, to narrate the book, and to do so as a backward glance. We begin in the middle of things, in North Carolina, in 1842, with the signal discovery that Eng, our storyteller, and his brother are not at all alike. Perhaps it would be better to say that they are uncongenial. There is a deep fraternal bond, in addition to the superficial one, that ties them together, but their personalities have differed markedly ever since they were first taken away from their native houseboat to be exhibited before, and possibly sacrificed by, the King of Siam. Chang, it turns out, is a born entertainer. He loves the attention. Eng, in contrast, becomes a reader of Shakespeare and the Bible, a man who would prefer to be alone. When the brothers leave for America and Europe, Eng makes a point of learning to speak educated English, while Chang remains content with subliterate pidgin. As a result, the reader has to be reminded again and again that the brothers are literally inseparable. The author has made one other wise decision. Instead of focusing on the twins' showbiz career, accentuating the glitter and the bombast of mass entertainment as it took shape against the backdrop of increasingly hypocritical Victorian respectability, Mr. Strauss turns his back on all of that, for the most part, and centers his book on the domestic lives that begin when Chang and Eng encounter two hitherto unmarriageable sisters, Adelaide and Sarah, innkeeper's daughters, who are not squeamish about what I, as a young man, found so rebarbative. Notwithstanding the chapters that fill us in on the twins' early life, Chang and Eng is the story of a dual marriage. Mr. Strauss's great accomplishment is to present the improbable and the extraordinary as the everyday life that Chang and Eng and their wives pass together. There are difficulties, but most of them are surmountable, just as difficulties usually are for all of us. When one of the marriages grows cold and loveless, the husband's unusual anatomy is not much of a contributing factor. There have been hints of trouble all along, ever since Eng, the reluctant spouse, warned the innkeeper's daughters that he and Chang were inseparable. Sounding rather like Waldo Lydecker and Laura, Chang interjects, "We have decided," I said angrily, "that we would rather simply look upon pretty girls chastely than take up residence in a graveyard." I cleared my throat. "So the answer is no, we cannot be separated." Atop all of this, Mr. Strauss has the wit to balance a final fillip. Quote, "It was impossible for us to travel away from the Confederacy for any amount of time, and few people in the South were interested in seeing Siamese twins attached at the chest. The populace had more important concerns. We managed to tour only once in the last 3 years of the war, and that tour was not lucrative enough to justify its expense. Nothing that was made outside of the South could be obtained easily, thanks to the suffocating blockade, and Lincoln had declared all slaves in the rebellion states free. In practical terms, his proclamation had no direct impact. Lincoln was sly enough to free slaves only in the Confederate states. Still, we now knew that if the Union won, the abolition of slavery would follow, and after the Battle of Antietam, it looked more and more like the Union would win eventually. This meant we were certain to lose our slaves, either by governmental decree or simply because we would not be able to afford them for long. And to add to insult, the final Emancipation Proclamation sanctioned the recruitment of blacks into the Union Army's United States colored troops, which gave the uncomfortable impression of slaves fighting their masters. Tom, who tended to our children, never mentioned the proclamation, and neither did any of our other slaves. But everyone knew that both slavery and the rebellion were doomed." A page or so later, that faithful retainer Tom walks off with the other slaves without so much as a goodbye. It's a difficult moment for the reader. Mr. Strauss invests this desertion with sympathy for Ang, knowing perfectly well that his readers will recognize, perhaps less emotionally, that for the slaves, this is a motion of liberation, not desertion. It is the sort of morally delicate complication that Mr. Strauss handles with a master juggler's aplomb. The struggles of small farmers in the rural South of the 19th century may not make for the interesting backdrops that Thailand's royal court and New York's hippodromes provide, and there were a few somewhat suffocated moments when I wished that Chang and Ang had settled somewhere that I'd find more attractive. Mr. Strauss's narrative skill, however, held my interest and attention. Utterly without pretension of any kind, Chang and Ang raises hitherto unguessed-at complexities of personhood. I was never sorry that I changed my mind about reading this fine book.
You've been listening to Friday Movies, a podcast from Portico at portifex.com.